You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Big kick to the groin, hasn't it? Certainly has. Carlin, 800-919-3776. We'll take your calls throughout the night. Talked to Damian Woody a little while ago, who offers some tremendous perspective overall about how he grew up and about what really needs to come to make some change happen here. All the different perspectives that we've heard all have eerily similar stories and eerily similar requests that everybody listen. Just listen when people tell you what their stories are, African Americans, that is. Well, let's lay out the night. First of all, we'll talk to Damian in a little while. We'll play that back for you in just a little while. We'll take your calls. I want to hear from you on all of it at 800-919-3776. It does look like we might be getting somewhat closer to an actual baseball season, and we will discuss that in a little bit as the owners have made yet another counterproposal that doesn't seem likely to get accepted, but at least you have some core issues that are getting agreed upon. We'll get to all of that in the midst of, we hope, is not an incredibly violent and crazy evening as we have had over the last few weeks. But given the events of the last hour or so, who knows? And we'll see what happens. But, you know, I've walked around the last few days feeling somewhat of like I'm a fraud. Be able to sit up here and try to talk about racial inequality in any way. As I detailed on Friday, all you do as, frankly, a white guy is sit up here and you're worried about how you phrase things. You're worried about ticking people off. You're worried about saying the wrong things. But because I've never experienced it in real life directly, that's kind of the point, isn't it? I'm supposed to be the one, we're supposed to be the ones that are paying most attention right now to everything that's going on. And the thing that I keep coming back to is feeling uncomfortable. It has been one giant feeling of uncomfortable, and I've been walking around all weekend thinking about uncomfortable and the concept of that. You know, in so many other walks of life, we tell people to get comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, I'll have kids who aspire to be broadcasters come up and ask questions and email and that kind of thing. And I always tell them, you know, the best thing you can do is keep an open mind that you don't have to be locked in on doing one thing. I've done a lot of different things in my career, and I've been uncomfortable trying a lot of other things, but I've only gotten better from it. But yet, in the simplest of terms, that's what this is about. For everyone involved, this has been nothing but just that. Uncomfortable. But it's what we need to be in order to improve. You have to get comfortable being in that situation, being in an uncomfortable spot. It's too easy to just let go what's transpired and be all talk, right? I mean, all weekend long, sat here and looked at social media and people jump on other people, you know, other celebrities, people, why aren't you posting? Why aren't you saying this? You're not doing this. You're not doing that. And then they do, and then you dive, okay. And you don't let people just be who and what they are and do and say what they feel. And that's kind of what this is supposed to be about. And we can all sit here and repost on social media our messages of outrage, our messages of support for the African-American community, our belief in, frankly, good versus evil and believing in the good and believing the very premises that this country is built upon, that all people are equal, that there is a freedom of speech in our country, no matter what your belief is, and it's supposed to be supported, defended, and it's one of the great aspects of America, that you can say things and you have the freedom to do it even if other people disagree with you. Well, the one thing you can't do is treat other people as if they're not equal. And that's what we've been doing for hundreds of years. And you sit there and you watch this, and I said this the other night, I kind of feel borderline ashamed that all along I thought I had this great perspective on all this and all the right perspectives on this. But the truth is, you know, I haven't been as engaged enough, and I feel like I need to be more engaged. And that means letting my actions speak more than my words. Beyond this, my job, though, is to use my words. Outside of it, my actions will be involved. So the question all along is, for me, is can this be different? This one time, can this possibly be different? Well, I think Bomani Jones probably said it best this morning on Get Up. Take a listen.
Now, what seems to be different about what's going on right now versus what we've seen in previous years is there's a lot more white people out here in the streets in all these different cities. I mean, I saw something about a Black Lives Matter protest in Salt Lake City. Ain't for so many black people that could even show up if they wanted to go here. Like, this has hit the mainstream in a much different way. And I recall it was like a week and a half ago, Tom Brady signed a letter that the Players Coalition had put out about the Ahmaud Arbery shooting. It was a really big deal that Tom Brady had done that, because Tom Brady was coming forth and lending his name and his image towards something that could make for a measure of change in a personal way that the leagues themselves, the NFL in particular, has never really done. So, like, when we look back on this, I think the inflection point that we're going to see about this time is that for whatever reason, this was a moment that moved a lot of white people to come out and say a lot of the things, and more importantly, hear a lot of the things that people have been telling them. So the focus that we've all had on black people here is very, very important. But the biggest reason that we're talking about it in this way is, for one reason or another, this has struck white people in a much different way, which is a good thing, because I think it makes it more likely that something substantive can come out of this, because quite honestly, people listen to y'all in a way that they don't listen to me.
I understand what he's saying completely, and it brings it more into focus, right? The idea that it hopefully there is a measure of hope in this somehow, that this could be a different time. Now, what's transpiring right now, notwithstanding, considering what could happen this evening, notwithstanding, we are hopeful that there is peace, that there are peaceful protests, there are people speaking their minds and allowed to do so in the right ways. But it becomes what about, not so much what about, but it becomes what happens tomorrow and the next day. It's right versus wrong. It's good versus evil. It's not one group of people versus another group of people. It's about people coming together and understanding, politics aside, it's just about what's right. Now, again, I stress, politics aside, President Obama wrote a column for Medium today. It offers perspective. It offers ways to get involved, to take action, should you choose. I tweeted it out a few minutes ago, and, you know, take a look, see what you think. Not about the political side of it, and he doesn't make it about that at all. It's about us responding as a people, growing as a country, and understanding that the words "we are all created equal" are not just words. They're actual sentiment. And while it's a shame that we actually have to take action for that to be the case, we do. We do. One last thing. I welcome all your calls. I welcome all of your thoughts. I welcome everything that you think, because I want us to have a healthy discussion, agree, disagree, whatever you want. There's one phrase that you're going to lose me on tonight, and that's, what about such and such? What about this? What about that? Not the whataboutisms tonight, folks. That's not what it is. It's about this situation, not about other situations. It's about this one. So let's keep it to that. Don't compare this to other things that have happened, because this is in and of itself a deep enough situation that we have to contend with. So I welcome your calls. Let's do it. Let's talk about it.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
But let's get uncomfortable. Let's talk about this, and let's, you know, spend time trying to understand what it's going to take for us to as a group, make a real change in what's going on. Matt in Linden will start us off tonight. Matt, what's going on, bud?
Hello. I love this show, man. Doing a great job. I just think that what happened to that man was absolutely terrible, and we need to fix things in America. But I really wanted to call to highlight somebody from my town that sadly 2 years ago he took his own life. But before that, he was a cop in Linden, New Jersey. His name was Danny Kaczynski, and he really was like somebody that worked hard to promote, like, this. He was, I don't know how to explain it, like he was very, he was not racist at all. I don't, so everybody in the, I can't even put words on it, but everybody in the community, he worked at the PAL, like when he was done being a cop, he would just dedicate all his time to the PAL and everybody. He would help everybody out, minorities, white people, Spanish people, anybody, black people, everybody. And everybody had a connection to him, and I just wanted to highlight him because the things he did for our community is what everybody should strive to be like, strive to be like Danny Kaczynski, because he really was a unifying part of Linden.
You know, I'm just reading about him a little bit right now, and, you know, the community, obviously, he was a big part of it. This is, as you said, back in 2017. Appreciate the phone call, Matt. And, you know, you want people that are in the situations that he is in now, outside of his obviously troubled situation where he took his own life. He was somebody that, just from what I'm reading here, was very respected in Linden as a leader there. So as much as I can appreciate what you're talking about there, we are now in a situation where you hope that this does not go in vain, that this does not go away in vain and just fade off into the distance like so many other of these incidents have. Thomas in Katona is up next. Thomas, what's cooking, bud?
Chris, good evening. How are you?
I'm good, Thomas. How are you?
You know, the incident that occurred was horrific. Wish it never would have happened. And what I want to talk about is, many years ago, after the O.J. Simpson case, domestic violence became a hot point in police departments across the United States. And there was a set procedure put in place all the way down the line for what to do in any type of contingency. In the old days, it was, you would tell the husband to go take a walk and take a breather and come back, and you'd have these horrific incidents. So this entire procedure is put in place, and still every once in a while, you know, you'll hear a story where, you know, maybe the cops didn't do enough and there was an incident of domestic violence. My point being, this is going to happen again in 6 or 7 months. It might not be as, you know, obvious as this one, but it's in a sad way, it is part of the nature of this job. When a police officer gets involved in some sort of physical confrontation with the public, there is always, you know, the human factor. Sometimes, and I'm not saying it's in this case, it looks like there is no excuse in this case. It is one of the most difficult jobs to do in the world. There are moments when you're saying to yourself, is it my life, my partner's life on the line? What am I supposed to do here? That's what I just want to put out there. And I get that, Thomas.
And I assume you're a retired officer?
Yes. I'm out over 8 or 9 years, so I'm old and done with. But
what I would say is
similar happens in 6 months. Are we going to go through a week?
Thomas, here's the point, even deeper. Thomas, we're not talking about the situations that you're discussing. And I totally agree. I think police officers should be paid more. I think they have among the hardest jobs in society, period. And I can understand what you're talking about when you're deciding on whether it's your life or your partner's life. I totally get all that. And certainly, I can't appreciate the situation having never been in it. But what we witnessed the other day is a lynching, basically. That's pretty much what it is. Because Thomas, as much as he was there, and whether he was trying...
I wouldn't use the word lynching. It's a horrific.
It was a murder. It was a murder. It was a murder. Thomas. It was not in the same vein.
But to a job, which is what all cops do, and how this is how these things occur. That this is how they ignite.
But all right. Tom, my point here is this: the guy had a fake $20 bill
in 6 or 7 months. Something similar may happen again.
It may, Thomas. It may. And I'm hoping that it doesn't, and thanks for the call. But that was a murder of an African-American man. That's what it was. And if you watch that video and you see that officer's knee needlessly in this gentleman's neck over a fake $20 bill, I'm sorry, that's wrong. It's wrong. And it's a different situation than what you're talking about. It may happen again. I pray it doesn't. As much as it is a police officer, the job is in so many ways a thankless one. And one when you're put into these situations, police officers also have to be above reproach. They do. They simply do. And of course, it's always... You know, just a few guys here and there. Those guys have to get weeded out before more violence happens. Julius in Morristown is next. Julius, what's up?
Hey, Chris. Love the show, man. Listen, I have a point to make, but listening to that caller before me, I'm sitting here and I'm shaking, man. And I'm going to tell you why. Because, you know what? At the end of the day, what happened with Floyd was a murder, was a lynching. That cop, that person before, he's part of the issue. Because instead of calling up here and talking about the injustice, yes, the police have a hard job and a thankless job. And I respect and love everybody in the law enforcement that protect my family, doing it the right way. But when you're talking about, oh, it's about the police, the job, and this and that, it's going to happen again. What is your mind at? That's part of the problem right there, Chris. That's not my point, but oh my goodness, this is where we're at.
Unfortunately, I know it, but Julius, think about this for a second. How many times has this happened? You know, and I don't want people to put percentages about how low it happens. Police officers have to be perfect. And it's when it comes to this, when it comes to a defenseless man and 9 minutes with your knee in the guy's neck needlessly, wasn't even wrestling around or anything?
No.
I mean, I'm sorry. You have to be better than that. You have to be perfect when it comes to that stuff.
You 100% do. And Chris, to my point, like, all of these white athletes and you, I appreciate you for letting me on here to have this platform to voice my feelings, because I've been black for 42 years now. You know what I'm saying? But, like, the conversation needs to happen within your community, like everybody's been saying. But Michael Kay said something earlier I want to touch on, and I hope he's listening, because I really appreciate and respect everything Michael Kay does and stands for. But he had mentioned that when, you know, he's watching the news comes on, the video comes on, he turns off because his 5-year-old and his 7-year-old are in there, and he doesn't want them to see. I'm black. I have to let my kids younger than 5 and 7 understand what the world is going to make them realize they are. So, yes, unfortunately, it's tough to look at. It's tough to talk about. But that'll also ignite change, telling, hey, you 5-year-old, you 7-year-old, this is not okay. This is what hate looks like. This is what we must eradicate. In my house, we don't say hate. That's the H word. It's not hell. Hate is the H word in my house. My kids won't say it because we don't do that. That we need to take it another step further than just us as adults. We have to pass it on, like the racism has been passed on.
Hey, Julius, I can appreciate what you're saying, and thanks for the call. You know, I don't want to speak on behalf of Michael's stuff because I didn't hear it, and I'm not a parent. I agree that the way that has to be handled is education all the way up. How that's appropriately done, I don't have an answer. You know, when it comes to children, I live in the cheap seats, much as I do. When it comes to this situation, I don't live in it every day. I don't. But education is a massive part of it. A massive part of it. I heard Bart say this the other day. You know, there may be people in your life that it's just too late for. It's not too late for the people who are around you, and it's not too late for your children, and it's not too late for you. 800-919-3776. As I said, let's keep diving in. Let's be uncomfortable. I'm fine with it, because we all have to be more uncomfortable with it.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
800-919-3776. Mark's in Newark next. 98.7 ESPN. Mark, go.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. I'm good.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm here, praise the Lord. Chris, I want to say something that's real uncomfortable. You know, I heard something, the whole death of Mr. Floyd hurts more than I have any words to say. There's that. But, you know, something else has been resonating with me, and I haven't got a chance to voice it, so I'm going to attempt to do so now. And it's directed to police officers, like the one that was previously retired police officer. This reflection for me is to police officers. Because that's what this is about. This isn't about regular racism, because people can say everybody has some racism. People can say that. How true it is, I don't know, but people can say that. But we're not talking about other forms of racism that happen, because I've experienced the whole gambit of them. But to police officers, I was listening to this pooper lady in Central Park, and I was dissecting her the video. And Chris, she said to, I guess his name was Cooper too, I'm going to call the police and tell them that a black man is attacking me and my dog. And it just kept ringing in my head, and I'm thinking to myself, this is important. Because here's a white woman who didn't say, Chris, she didn't say, I'm going to call the police and tell them that some dude is attacking me and my dog. Because if some dude was attacking you and your dog, that's what you would tell the police. But she made it a point to say that I'm going to call the police and tell them a black man is attacking me and my dog. So that I start thinking about that. And again, this is to the police. This is why. She said that because she had the confident expectation, without a question, that something definitely not good, definitely not good, was going to happen to that black man, not that dude. When she said that, she thought, without a shadow of a doubt, I'm going to tell the police that a black man attacked me and my dog, a white woman, and something very bad was going to happen to him, so she thought. But he videoed it. And what she found out was that what she thought was going to happen didn't happen. And the problem comes in when she expected, just make sure you emphasize he's a black man, because then the police are going to do something excessive to him. That was what she thought, and that's why she didn't say some guy. So if that's the attitude that this white woman has, that I could call the police and say a black man attacked me, oh, he better run now. And that's why the relations between black men and the police are strained to the highest limit, is because of that entitlement that white people feel. If I say it was a black man, and it ain't the first time I heard that, the big black guy attacked me. If I said it was a black man, something excessive is going to happen to that black man. And thank God he had a video that heard her say that. Until that kind of mindset changes, until the police are held accountable for when they do something to that black man, just because he's that black man, then okay, because then you don't put your knee in nobody's neck. You don't have to shoot nobody down. You don't have to do that just because he's a black man. If he's wrong, arrest him. That's your job. But when the white public thinks that I'm going to say it was a black man that attacked me and my dog.
Mark, I'll say one thing here, okay? Mark, I know, I get it. Here's what I'm going to say. It's that particular woman. Not all white people think that way.
I don't think that.
Yeah, okay. That. Well, I mean, that particular woman was doing exactly what you said. She had it in her mind that somehow by saying, I don't disagree in one bit, Mark, and that's what made it the most troubling about it. And thanks for the call. There is no question that in her mind, because she was, you know, threatening to say that as I'm being attacked by an African-American man, that somehow that's going to resonate deeper with the police. And that's unfortunate for the police, and that's unfortunate for her, or for him, rather. But you know what? He obviously handled the whole thing fantastically, and she got fired and has been ostracized since. And I think when the stupidity combined with when you have people that are stupid and equally as arrogant, that's where the most dangerous combination exists. And that was her in that instance. And we all know plenty of people who are stupid and arrogant. And I'm not making myself out to be a member of Mensa, but the first thing I try to figure out about people is, you know, as I talk to them, what are they about? And when someone acts like that, that is really down deep what they are about when that comes forward. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Let's hit Lily in Manhattan next. Lily, what's going on?
Hi. You were addressing the corruption in the police department and why the police don't speak up and correct the bad apples in the thing. And there was a movie made on a real, a true story with a policeman whose name was Serpico. And it was with Al Pacino. It's quite a while ago, but it was...
Sure, early 80s, if I'm correct, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, but it would be interesting because in there is the seed of what happens to if do people speak up and if they go. And that I think it's important because it's a starting point that you could enable you to address that. And it happens in most like corporations that it's dangerous when they speak up against one another. And that point should be addressed, that they should be honored and what they say should be taken up, and that's...
Well, Lily, if what has gone on over the last several years leading to this unfortunate crescendo of it all, if that does not tear down any stupid code when it comes to that kind of thing, then I don't know what would.
But we have to push and make sure that it does begin to tear it down.
Of course. And yeah. There's no doubt. And it's about actions, you know. And I can really appreciate where you're coming from on this. And thanks for the call. It's about actions from here. And this is what we'll talk to Damian Woody about a little bit later. We did speak to him earlier, and we'll play that for you in just a little bit. Part of what we talk about is what we heard from Bomani Jones earlier. Like, this seems to have struck a lot of people a lot more. I don't want to say that they've been more affected by it. Certainly white people have been more affected by this than they ever have been before. I think that's accurate. Hopefully we're getting collectively as a people smarter from it, more enlightened from it. As tragic as it is, it shouldn't take this for it to have to happen. But you're almost hesitant to suggest that maybe it could be a turning point. You can hope. And we certainly hope at this point that it is. Because you don't want this to be in vain. Everything, the pain that this country is going through then, and that George Floyd's death goes in vain. 800-919-3776. Open lines for you. We continue a little bit later. We'll talk to Damian Woody. We'll take your calls on this throughout the course of the evening. We'll get to some baseball as well, and hopefully getting a little bit closer to coming back. But we continue on this because, as we said at the beginning, we change from being uncomfortable. We change from putting ourselves in uncomfortable situations. So let's be uncomfortable.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Years ago. This is 4 or 5 years ago, and I was in the South driving through a rural part of Alabama with a friend. A friend who is ex-military. Tremendous guy. And I'm doing 55 and a 40 at dusk, and I get pulled over, and I get my license out and the rental car registration out, ready to go. And just as I am about to hand it to the officer, it was a state trooper, I believe. No, I shouldn't say that. I'm not positive of that. It was a municipal officer, now that I think about it, definitely. Forget what town. But just as I, you know, I'm about to, you know, do all the right things, my friend says to me, just don't talk. I got this. Because he could tell that the officer was ex-military as well. So they just started, as I handed over my license and the registration of the rental car and all that, I'm just sitting there as my friend in the passenger seat and the officer having a discussion. And they're going back and forth and trading where they served and who they served with and battalions and a lot of military speak. And this is going on for a good 4 or 5 minutes. And finally, the officer hands me back my license, didn't go and run it or anything. And he says, here you go, sir, just, you know, slow down tonight and, you know, get where you're going safely. And hopefully we'll get that blanket Muslim out of the White House soon. And my friend, just as I went, officer walks away. My friend puts his hand over my mouth and just says, let it go. Let it go. And I'm just sitting there thinking, what just happened? And I'm not by any stretch casting an aspersion across to all police officers, but like that was a mentality of one gentleman. And like we could sit here and say, oh, well, it was the South. Well, it's Alabama and all that. But like that's the mentality that has to change across the country. I mean, it's just it's crazy. And this is a police officer at the time. It's absolutely crazy. Just was thinking about it before, and Joel and I were talking about it, and I wasn't sure that I wanted to tell the story on the air, but I think it, and Joel encouraged me to do it, and I just think, again, let's get comfortable being uncomfortable and talk about this stuff. Like, that's something that happened with me, and it's all three white people, and he says that like, that officer said it like it's some kind of code between white people. And I was just rattled for the next, 3 hours in the ride. Let's get back to the phones. 800-919-3776. Rob in Brooklyn is next on ESPN Radio. Rob, what's going on?
Yes, how you doing, Carlin?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. I'm a young black man, and I'm from Brooklyn, a area called Brownsville. And I work for the city. I'm actually a bus driver for the city. And I just moved out of my area maybe about 2 years ago. Now, like people say, we have, it's sometimes it's not even the plainclothes, the beat cop. 9 times out of 10, the beat cop's okay because they know you. They see you in the area. But, this is kind of a Brownsville area in Brooklyn. It's kind of an impoverished area. It's not too many, it's hardworking people, but not making too much money. I stayed in the area because I have my friends and I was comfortable in the area. Now, a lot of times if I'm driving around, I have a decent car. If I'm in uniform, the cops don't mess with me. If I'm out of uniform, out of my MTA uniform, always getting pulled over. And even though I work for the city and I drive the bus, I know my license is good because you have to keep the clean license. My registration insurance is good. I'm still kind of, as a young black man, I'm in my young 30s, I still get scared when I'm pulled over by a cop. A lot of times, it's not, like I said, it's not the police officers. A lot of times, it's the detectives. The detectives is the one that gives you a harder time than the actual cop that's pulling you over from a car. Because the first time they come to your car, they already got their hand on their gun when they come to your car. I don't have no tinted windows or nothing. The second thing, when they come to your car, it's the way they speak to you. They speak to you very disrespectful from the outcome. It's like they're looking for you to get into a conversation with them, then they say stuff to you to try to, and to me it's trying to provoke you to to get into a confrontation with you, because they don't pull you over and just say license, registration, insurance. First thing they say is you did this or you did that. But I protect my life. I've been driving for 20 years. I'll be respectful to them. I say, officer, no, I didn't make a turn without signal. I didn't do this. The first thing they tell you, oh, you didn't signal. Now let me, It's just their tone. Their tone is the one that try to provoke you into a bigger thing than what it is. And like I said, then I had two incidents within the last week. Like I said, I'm out of uniform. They pull me over. First thing they say, out of your car. I say, officer, I step in my car, but what do you pull me over for? You just come in and say, out of my car. So I say, I'm not going to give you that. I'll step out of my car. So I steps out of my car, sit on the ground. I said, ho, I'm not sitting on the ground. First you pull me out of my car. Now you're telling me sit on the ground. What am I sitting on the ground for? First, what do you pull me over for? They don't give you no excuse. And people don't understand is that this happens all the time. They pull you over, and like I said, this happened to me twice in 2 weeks, the same type of incident. They pull me over. They don't ask you for anything. Out of your car. You can't get into a confrontation with them because you don't know where it's going to lead to. I get out of my car, sit on the floor. I get out of my car, but why are you telling me to sit on the floor like I'm some kid? Then I asked her, say, officer, listen, I'll sit on my car, I'll stand by her, but I'm not sitting on the floor. You have my right to tell me to sit on the floor. I'm a man just like you're a man. And the first thing, I said, listen, let me grab my wallet. I'll tell them what I do before I do it because I don't want no confrontation. I said, I'm going to go on my wallet. I work for this city. I'm going to show you my badge or such and such because, you know, all cities where you have a badge. So I showed them the badge. They was like, all right, such and such. Let me see your license and registration now. Now, once I showed them that I work for the city, now the conversation turns a little bit different. You know, now they ain't that much vulgar with me. But it's just like these the type of issues that we go through as young black men in America.
You know, I can't imagine, and I appreciate the phone call, Rob, that being the situation. You know, I can't imagine being in your shoes, but that's the thing. I have to. We have to imagine being in your shoes and what that's like for not just ourselves, but what it would be like for our families. And I'm so sorry that that's been your experience and that's what you go through, but you know, these kinds of personal things are what's going to resonate.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.